Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello, and welcome to the Agestes edition of Slate Money Succession. Episode 6, everything goes sideways. We thought we had a deal. Maybe we didn't have a deal. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of HuffPo.
Hello.
And HuffPost. Guess what, people?
HuffPost.
Oh, really? HuffPost. Sorry, I'm not allowed to call it the Huffington Post anymore, so now I'm calling it HuffPo, but apparently it's HuffPost.
Please go on sidebar. And introduce our amazing guest.
Taffy Brodesser-Agner.
Hello.
Needs literally no introduction because she's the most famous person in the world. She has a TV series. She has a best-selling novel. She has more like celebrity profiles under her belt than most of us have had hot dinners. She is an expert on all things wealth and society, I would say.
Medium.
So, and most importantly, for the purposes of our current conversation, she is a massive Succession stan.
Huge.
And specifically, a Jerry stan.
Jerry, I live or die by Jerry.
So let's just start there, shall we? Like, what is it about Jerry that you love so much?
I love that she is just trying to survive. I love that she, that like personal information only comes out from her when, as a character, personal information only comes out when it's necessary. Like when she's being blackmailed by Shiv at Shiv's wedding. And Shiv is like, you're my godmother. And we're like, yeah, what? And she's like, you were married. Don't you have any advice? And she's like, well, my husband died. And we're like, what? You know, and I love that. I love that, like, she has no expectation of being anything but a sideline character. And that is where she steals every scene. I just love her. And I also love her looks of incredulousness.
Oh, those are wonderful.
She, like, her incredulousness.
When Roman calls her a mole woman and she just looks at him.
Right. And then later, she's like, bye, rock star. Bye, mole woman.
That's the closest thing that Succession comes to, like, a successful relationship.
Yeah, so yeah. I have so many questions. Well, first, I admire Jerry also because she is three steps ahead of everything, especially in this episode.
Yes.
She knew to call Shiv. As soon as, like, this Me Too on the cruise thing is going down,
yeah,
she's like, we need a lady to
come
in here. Can't be me.
No-brainer.
Can't be the lawyer lady. It's got to be Shiv. Call Shiv. She's three steps ahead.
Right.
She asked Roman to go schmooze with the Saudi stand-in guy, the rich guy with
Azerbaijani.
The loafers. Yes. And she's like, you never know. You don't know what's going to happen in the next few hours and how right.
36 hours. Next 36 I don't know what the next 36 hours looks like. Oh, my God.
How right she was. How right she was.
She was.
Yet at the same time, I believe that she feels affection for Roman. Am I just deluded? Is she just playing the game really well? Does she feel the affection?
Is she the equivalent of like Jacob Rees-Mogg's nanny?
I feel like it might be the most interesting thing to happen to her, his like weird masturbation crush obsession with her.
Yeah.
And that she does have some affection for him because he's like, look what his father did to him this time.
Oh my God, we should
he
talk
was
about
like
that
defending
right away.
His father, and his father, without even looking at him, just a tooth. Do you know how hard you have to be hit to jostle a rich person's tooth?
I kind of didn't believe that part.
But it was a...
I admire your skepticism.
I was shocked.
I took their word for it.
You can whack someone hard in the mouth, they can lose a tooth.
But yeah. Logan is so ill throughout this episode. He's throwing up in the restaurant behind the menu into a cup.
Yeah.
He's not feeling well. The heat lamp is making him schwitz a little. Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, I was a little skeptical that he could knock his son's tooth out. But fine.
I think
I take
you
the show's
find,
word for it.
I think you find reserves of strength. I think
when you're very
when you're
angry,
pissed at your, yeah.
I mean,
youngest
if,
child.
If you were going to have like a weightlifting competition among all of the members of the Roy family, like I would not be surprised to see Logan win that competition.
But also, what's interesting about it to me is that the anger came from Roman expressing the frustration that was his father's due to express. Like that seems to me that the real capital on this show is who is allowed to say what they think. And you saw it in the first scene when he gives Kendall, he's like, go tell those lawyers. And he yells on the private plane. He goes in and he yells at the lawyers and he just keeps going. And then it becomes like a dad speech. Like, I'm very disappointed in you.
Oh my God, that line was amazing.
Pour the shit I'm pouring over you onto your minions.
Uh-huh.
I'm very disappointed.
He goes, quote, everything you do is fucking bullshit and I'm very disappointed in you. It's like, what?
It's like, that's what it's like to be raised by Logan Roy.
You're fucking me here. I'm making good faith fucking assessments to my father, and you're making me look like a hack, and I will not have it. Stop sucking each other off back here and get fucking on it. You pour the shit I'm pouring on you, on your fucking minions, and you ride them. I don't care. 24 hours, rolling shifts, crack the fucking whip. Everything you're doing is fucking bullshit, and I'm very disappointed in you. I swear to God, I will fucking fire you if you keep monkeying around. Put the fucking snacks away. I don't want to fucking hear it!
We've been circling for a fucking hour. Tell them we're running out of gas!
And then he immediately goes back into the cabin, and then Logan starts yelling.
Yeah.
It was like the shit is just pouring down,
it is.
down.
But like, I feel like when Logan says something like that, he means it and people are scared. And when Kendall says something like that, everyone goes like, that's hilarious.
Right. Like he's imitating somebody with power.
Right.
Daddy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But the lawyer that he's yelling at, the face on that lawyer,
I know.
Is rage and anger. I felt
know.
It.
I know.
I've looked like that. For sure.
I feel like that inside. That's my inside face.
For sure. 100%. Yeah. They all hate him, obviously. Yeah. But no one looks at Logan like that.
Because Logan is just like Logan is the reason they're there. Kendall is just a condition of being there.
Yeah.
Right?
But let's talk about Marsha, because you're talking about this whole question of who gets to say what they think. And it's Marsha who walks in, you know, with a look of fury on her face, right next to her husband, and looks straight at Shiv and goes, that was too much. And
right.
That was like, she clearly has power and she, like, she's way scarier when she says that than Kendall ever is in a plane.
Marsha seems to me to be all over the place. It's the only thing I can think of critically of the show, which, as you know, I the show is aspirational for me.
do you aspire to being a member of the Roy family?
I aspire to that kind of wealth. Like all the things the show does to indicate that it's disgusting only makes me want it more. I'm like okay. I mean, yeah, it's a waste of food.
When they throw away the shrimp.
But yeah, but no, when they throw away the everything in that
in
episode.
In like episode one.
Yeah. But look at the house and look how they have people to call to check out the chimneys. That's a life I want. I want a life where the plumber comes just because I called. I don't have that now.
But you will soon with your new
deal.
I mean,
what you're really getting is you're getting the last grasp.
But would you trade? I mean, these people, they have no love. They don't know how to love. They are the worst people in the world. Would you trade all that? Would you become the worst person in the world in order to be able to call the plumber?
I would be a Pierce.
Fair.
I would be more of a Pierce.
But, uh-huh. But the Pierces are not exactly good people.
But neither am I. Neither are any of us. Yeah. Who's a good person? Who's a good person?
I'm not saying good or bad person, saying? But like just lack of joy and love and connection, human connection. The Roys don't have that, except maybe Roman
has
it with
Jerry. I think the Roys have incredible human connection and they all work in symbiosis with each other. I think they're a very close family. And you see it from the, like, from in the first season, in the hospital where Shiv and Roman get into, like, a fist fight? That's like, I'm very close with my sisters. And that could happen.
I did enjoy, the animating, the thing that Roman gets hit over is because towards the end of the episode, when they're at Argestes, which I assume is like the Aspen Ideas Festival or something.
It's Herb Allen's Sun Valley Media Conference.
Okay, great. So there's this whole debate, who's going to speak, because they've been totally scandalized and shamed because of this Me Too story on the cruise ship, which involves not only Uncle Mo.
Uncle Mo.
Requiring women to have sex with him to give them jobs, but also like the death of a woman off of the ship into water, which I have to believe is somehow like they're doing something with the death in the water, right? We had the manslaughter. Now we have the women falling off ships thing.
So the Chappaquiddick just doesn't ever leave this show.
Leading up to this, there's a talk that Kendall and Roman were going to give about something that has no consequence, some corporate speak talk. I don't remember what it was. And then Shiv is
continuity
asked.
Continuity in the age of digital. Yeah.
And Shiv is asked, like, you please be the face of this scandal, because no one ever says it explicitly, but obviously it's because she is a woman, a younger woman, and she's not tainted by all the patriarchy bad.
And the person who asks her the most persuasively is Rhea.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to spend the capital. Sometimes you keep the capital.
Yeah, sometimes you spend the time earning the capital.
But which, of course, is like, whose side is Rhea on?
Rhea's side.
Can we just, that's what was going on with Rhea. Was it just about money?
Why was Rhea so, like, from day one when this whole thing started and Logan is like, I'll deal with Rhea, and then Shiv turns to Logan and says, wait, who does Rhea work for again?
Yeah.
And to all the way through this episode where Logan is constantly all over Rhea saying, like, Rhea, let's do this. You know what I need. You need to do this for me. Like, what leverage does Logan have over Rhea? Why is Rhea suddenly more keen to do this deal than he is?
Doesn't so she get keen. multi-million-dollar payout if the deal goes through or something?
Maybe that's
she,
Okay, so a caveat to my aspiration toward all this wealth is that I believe I would know when I had enough money. And I think that Rhea probably is paid millions and millions of dollars, right? That's
One assumes
that she's paid that much money. Maybe she has a chip on her shoulder from being the CEO of a family business and not being in the family. Like, you saw how angry she got that she wasn't on a family call. Mm-hmm. Like, she was hurt by it because all this confirmation that she's really just not family. Because she sees the way, Jones's name again?
Nan.
She sees the way Nan is always, like, treats everyone like family, but she wants to be familier. Right?
Oh, maybe. She what did she say her father used to do? Not a bricklayer, but she tells...
asbestos plant.
Yes, works as asbestos, so it's all gravy for her. She has that, like she wants more money because...
But also,
never
like,
can have enough,
we have seen enough of the Pierce family to know that they're not great people. They're all kind of hideous in their own way. And she has, you know... As she said, like, you've got to know when to spend the capital. If she has made her fuck you money,
this is her
opportunity to say fuck you to the Pierces, which she actually does at the end of the show when Nan basically just looks Logan in the eye and says, no, this deal's off. It's not happening. Rhea, far from, like, being the supportive CEO, turns to Nan and says, oh, Nan, come on, calm down. She tells her boss to calm down.
Calm down.
Honestly,
don't ever say that.
Never tell anyone to calm down.
Ever.
By the time you hit 30, you should know that. Yeah. You never tell anyone to calm
down. There's
no
such thing as calm down.
Nothing makes people calm down less than saying calm down to a person.
But that's, I mean, it almost reminded me of when Shiv, like, deliberately got fired by Gil. You know, that was Rhea just, like, deliberately just saying, okay, fire me.
Interesting. Yeah, I wondered if she had some kind of deal with Logan where she would come on board Waystar Royco after this closed with Pierce.
Or even if it doesn't close.
I think that she was trying to show Logan how much power she had, and she misstepped. She thought Nan would be folksy with her, and Nan was not folksy with her.
I mean, it's another example of how someone like Nan or Logan, they have the power. Everyone else is power adjacent. Like, they might think they have some stuff and they can pour shit on the other guys, but at the end of the day, there's only the people who own the capital truly have the power.
And now Sandy Furness is going to get the company.
But he has syphilis.
The MySpace of STDs.
I love Tom.
Yes.
Tom, I believe, I think that people think that Greg represents us. I think Tom does. I think they both do. They like
don't put that on me.
I'm putting it on all of us. I mean, the us of the viewer that's actually just me. that Greg is the one who is just kind of like a liberal-leaning guy who can't say no but can't stop saying yes and is now on coke. Whereas Tom is the guy who's like, here is how this corrupts a person who is lucky to be here, meaning not born into it. Like, here, human furniture. Like, this is what I'm supposed to want to do. In an alternate universe, I would say that Greg didn't really exist. He was a figment of Tom's imagination. But there's already the Greg the egg thing. I'm just saying, it would have been a good idea.
I mean, there's so many great Tom moments in this episode. Tom and I know we just... Tom and Greg together. We hear now.
So maybe it's like, ATN, we're here for you. And here spelled H-E-A-R.
We're here for you? That's just gibberish.
We're here for you.
Okay, we here for you. So that might be like, we here for you, man, because you don't need to hear we here.
Yeah, we
here. Also, we here for you. We're here for you. Is that, yeah, we're your
making
guys. Sense?
It's good because it's like, it's not clear exactly what the hell it means. So, lots of wiggle room?
Yes.
We here for you.
We here for you.
Yeah. So it would be bad to say we are listening because we are, in fact, listening.
Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Verizon used to have a product called ISIS. Does anyone remember that?
I do not remember that.
Verizon had, like, I think it was one of their jetpacks. Like, try the Verizon ISIS.
Oh, no.
And I remember the tweet that was like, please, we are changing it. We are changing it right away.
We here for you.
We here for you. My favorite Tom line in the episode was when Shiv tells him that, like, the scandal's going down. He goes, are they scapegoating me? Is it a piece about me? Is it about me? Did they ask for me?
It's so funny, but there's so many good lines.
He is terrified that it's about him, but on the other
he
hand,
wants
it's
it
like
to be about
he
him.
Wants it to be about him.
Right,
he's like, please, someone care about me.
Right.
And no one cares about him.
My favorite is when they're all trying to read the New York Magazine story. And you know how, like, you find out that something's in a story and you try to read it and you can't really comprehend it? And everyone there can't read it.
Right.
Like, everyone's like, it doesn't appear to be, well, are you remedial? She says, are you remedial?
Yeah, Shiv is the only person who's, like, read and digested it. Everyone else, and Logan's like, why do they make the print so small?
Yeah, that's how you know Shiv is the competent one, because she's the one who can read the article.
I like that Roman's like, no one sent me the link. Like, Google it. What do I Google? Bright Star roller coaster rape? Like, I'm always the person who's like, where's the link? And everyone's like, just Google it. We just described it to you.
Yeah.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
What about all their different reactions to the story? So Kendall, which kind of, I guess, surprised me, but then more I thought about it didn't, was like, we need to apologize. We need to fix stuff. Do you think that was him sublimating his guilt for doing the manslaughter, which I will never let go and neither will he? Like, he needs to say sorry for fucking something.
Right.
He wasn't able to make amends for that. So maybe he can make amends for this woman drowning as opposed to that dude drowning.
That's a lot of depth you're ascribing to old
Kimball. I went really deep because I watched this episode twice. So I had a lot to think about.
Yeah.
And but everyone else, like Shiv and Jerry, they're like, no, you just fuck off and move on. It was a long time ago. And then, of course, Roman thinks, like, is this even a big deal? It was just interesting to see everyone's reactions.
Yeah.
And think about how companies more generally are having to react to these kinds of
things. And it was interesting to see, like, the three of them on stage all, like, contradicting each other.
That's like what I was trying to say before, when they're all, like, fighting before they went on stage and, like, just, like, totally...
Period just came out.
I can see your nipples.
Your dick's hanging out, yeah. So they all fight, and then they go on stage and they try and put on like a semblance of agreeing with each other. But it, like, Nan's in the audience. Logan's looking at Nan. Nan's looking at them bickering on stage like 7-year-olds. And she's like, oh, my God, what the hell is this? Even is this family? And I need to mention this because I just discovered, I can't remember who had that article about why can't Roman ever sit properly.
Oh, I didn't read that.
No,
But like there's this wonderful article on the internet somewhere about like how Roman is completely incapable of just sitting normally in the chair, which is totally true. There's a whole bunch of places in Succession where like there will be a chair and he'll just sit down on the floor in front of the chair.
Really?
And that kind of thing.
That's so interesting.
And this was the prime example where he's like up on stage in a very important, like this massive scandal has just hit his company, and he does a classic Roman like curl up slouchy Jacob Rees-Mogg type thing in the chair. And what occurred to me is I used to have a boss who was very short, like 5'2". And what she said to me is that when kids fidget a lot, it's not because kids are naturally fidgety, which all of us think, but it's because their feet don't touch the ground. And if your feet don't touch the ground, it's just really uncomfortable to sit in a chair. And so what you wind up doing is tucking your legs under you, doing weird, like slouchy things, putting your legs above you. And so the way that Roman sits is the way that, like, a 5-year-old sits.
Okay. Counterpoint. I passed Kieran and Culkin, can't say it, in Soho a week ago, and he's my height, and I can reach the floor.
Well, no, I'm not saying, but that's what I'm saying is that he is now, like, physically big enough for his feet to touch the ground.
Like it's a habit.
He sits as though he isn't. He sits in a very childish
he's
way.
He's the youngest.
A literally childish
way. He's the
baby.
Yeah.
Babyish
way. He's, like,
way. Yeah.
Stunted. They're all just stunted.
He is the baby, and Jerry feels maternal towards him, and we saw Kendall being sort of, like, when Logan slapped him at Roman in the face, it was Kendall got his back up for him and was very protective.
Like, Kendall
do
that.
Yeah. He screamed at him.
There was another moment between Kendall and Roman in this episode where I was like, oh, they like each other, when he was like, what are you going to wear tomorrow? And Kendall's, I'm not going to tell you. And I was like,
yeah.
What is this? And they all wear the same stuff anyway.
Look at you scanning for influence like a yuppie RoboCop. So what are you rocking for the panel? Jacket or no jacket?
Right. Like I'm gonna fucking tell you, dude. Fuck off.
Okay.
Strategic advantage.
Fine. But fair warning, I'm thinking of no sock in it. Rocking some horny ankle cleavage.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Scary. I'm scared.
Yeah, you should be. Or am I just saying that to psych you out?
Everyone should read that piece in The New Yorker from Rachel Syme.
Rachel Syme, that was
clothing.
A great piece.
Okay, and then so can I please ask Taffy?
Yes.
This is the single biggest question and why I needed to have Taffy on for this episode.
Thank you.
Can you please tell us about Jerry's blouse when she's in her room?
I mean, why is she so dressed?
What even is
like,
that
why
blouse?
Is she wearing it like equestrian wear? That's what it felt like to me. It was, some people have a pajama routine. Do you know what I mean? Some people need to wear certain kinds of pajamas. But I don't know the answer to that. But I can ask her, because we're now DM friends.
Wait, are you talking about her pajamas in the last episode when she comes to the door and they have the handjob behind the bathroom? Or the
I'm talking about in the most
we
watched.
In this one, when he comes
where
she's
the
not...
tension is like, is he going to jerk off somewhere?
Yes.
In
ginormous
digesties. She was holding, I think, a martini. I think I saw olives.
Yeah, she was drinking. She had a martini.
Who has olives in their martini? They're alone in their hotel room. That kind of
room service.
I totally was.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but also, she had a big, there was a huge mini bar situation with effing vodka, because of course,
Explain what that means.
It just means that, like, you can make yourself a martini very easily in that room.
And they'll have a fully stocked
olives, everything.
Lemon, whatever you need.
Remember when Tom was like, do I get the champagne or do I just get the cashews?
I know.
Don't worry, they're the size of boomerangs.
They're the size of boomerangs. So because I had a Twitter incident yesterday that was J. Smith Cameron DMing me, as we all know, as we all saw. I learned of a line that was cut from the episode.
And this I bring news.
She ad-libbed something when Roman came. Let me just find it here. It's amazing.
This
it's reporting.
This is
reporting.
This is reporting. Yeah. This is
new information. Here is what she says. I had an improv they didn't use. When Roman knocked on my door, in one take, I said, oh, look, it's the electric douchebag. They didn't use it.
They didn't use
it. We'll never know why. I know. We'll never know why.
I want to know. Now I want to know how much of it is improvised. I always assumed it was all super scripted.
I know. But I guess maybe they're just, they're different takes.
I read that the scene, not from this week, from last week, the bathroom handjob scene, they recorded
Whoa,
it. They shot it.
Not a bathroom handjob.
Whatever. Masturbation.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Please
he gave
strike
himself
that
a hand
from the
job.
Podcast. But they recorded, they shot it 40 times or something, 30 times in all different kinds of ways before landing on the version we saw.
Really?
Huh.
Yes. So take away from that what you will.
Interesting.
What was the line? Do you need a hand job and an Advil? Does anyone remember that line?
Yes, I remember that. That was Logan, right?
That was Logan saying.
Logan has some.
Logan
good
was
lines.
Saying that to the bad PR guy who
Fisher
couldn't.
Fisher Stevens.
Yeah. Would you like a hand job and an Advil? I have it here.
Can we talk about just we're journalists here.
Actually, I don't think he's a bad PR guy. I think he's actually a perfectly competent PR guy.
My question is,
he's terrified,
the portrayal
though.
Of New York Magazine's fact-checking where no one knows what's in the story, that would
or
never
that they run
happen.
It in a couple of minutes because they're angry. Like, give us just a teaspoon of credit.
That
we're
going to
finish fact-checking.
Like yeah, you tell them exactly what's in the story, how everyone is saying, we don't know what's in the story.
Right.
What?
Right.
No, that's not a thing.
That is true. For any
Very
Slate
upset.
Money listeners who think that there's any verisimilitude here between like how investigative journalism actually happens and how it works on this show, this is not how investigative journalism works. It always works on this like no surprises basis where you go up to everyone and you're like, we're going to go through the whole story very carefully and ask you for comment and blah blah blah.
But can I just say, I think it was a Pressler story. I think that was a Pressler story. I think it gets optioned immediately.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
A girl dying on a boat.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
we'll have to get Pressler.
Well, I don't know, because she writes great stories and they were biased, but they made it sound like there wasn't much to the story. So
right. You're right. Then maybe not.
Which leads me to one question I have. So Logan, at some point in the episode, tells Marcia a bad story is coming and he hopes that she'll see her, you know, she'll see him in a good light still. And she reassures him. And the story really didn't involve him. Is there more to come about Logan? Is he like a Roger Ailes? Like, is there more going on there? Was he afraid more would come out about him? Did he push the woman off the boat?
Is he on a cruise? You think Logan's on one of his cruises?
I don't know. Is he pushing women into the water?
I like where you're going.
I think you're going to be disappointed.
I look at this like, this is the episode where we see, I think, possibly for the first time, Logan requiring emotional support from the women in his life.
Yeah.
That he goes up to Marsh, he's like, actually, I need you right now. You're going to be there for me. And she says, yes, I'm going to be there for you. And then immediately after she says that, she, you know, comes in on his arm and lashes out at Shiv on his behalf. Mm-hmm. And she is there for him. And then what's super interesting is even after Shiv has done her, you know, disastrous ad lib about dinosaurs, when they all go out into the lion's den of all of these people who wish them nothing but ill, he says, Siobhan, you're with me. And he puts Siobhan on his arm and he holds onto her for support.
Right, like in a feeble way.
And that was super interesting. But also that was a direct quote, visual quote, from where you had the opposite dynamic when Rupert Murdoch, in the middle of the Hackgate trial in the UK, mm-hmm. very visibly walked out with Rebecca Brooks on his arm, saying, like, this is my, like, adopted daughter, basically. I completely support her, and we are a team. And he comes out and gives her the fullest measure of visible support. It was, and visibly, because Rebecca Brooks, of course, was also this redhead who you know, looks very much like Siobhan season one. So, like, that visual echo was like, oh, I see what you're doing there.
Oh, I thought it was just him getting cover again from a woman to be like, women don't hate me, even though I have this terrible story in New York Magazine. Women are still good.
Oh, you thought it was tactical?
Yeah.
I thought it was actually a genuine emotional.
I don't know. I felt like the whole place was, it like, it was just like a social anxiety pit. Like watching Kendall scan like a yuppie RoboCop.
Like he, such a great line.
But he was like looking at all of the people that he has had disasters with. I mostly don't go to parties because I'm afraid of like seeing somebody that I may have accidentally like unfollowed and refollowed on Twitter. Like I would not be able to last at this place.
Mm-hmm. And this is also one of the reasons why it was a huge tactical error for Rhea to invite Nan to Argestes.
I know.
Nan clearly is uncomfortable in that kind of situation. Nan is comfortable when she's at Turnhaven in charge of everything and in control of everything. Mm-hmm. You bring Nan into Argestes, she's like the ninth most important person there, and she has no control of everything, and she does not like being in that situation. Right. And someone gives her a name tag, and she's like, there's no fucking way I'm wearing a fucking name tag. And while people like Kendall and even Logan know how to navigate that kind of situation where you're surrounded by a lot of people who are more powerful than yourself and you don't have control, someone like Nan has never needed to. And she feels very uncomfortable in that environment. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of like inherited wealth chiefs don't go to Davos, is because it's exactly the same situation. They're not in control.
Wow, that's really interesting. Also, she is one of those cheap rich people when she sees how much the food costs, the $75 Cobb salad.
Yeah.
I'll just have tap water.
But I think she does that to show that she is still like a person who knows the price of a gallon of milk, right?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Oh, but can we talk about the other great line when between Kendall and Stewie, when Stewie talks about the $75 Cobb salad and Kendall's like, we're going to buy something so expensive that you'll never be able to afford us. And Stewie goes, dude, is it Napster?
Can we talk about the name of this place?
Oh, yeah. Like, what does Argestes mean?
I'm glad you asked. It is the wind that blew the Argonaut ship, and it is a cleansing wind. It is a wind of starting over. And I feel like right before you had Turnhaven, like it's showing you its arc.
Well, what's starting over? Culling of the dinosaurs?
I guess like him chasing a car, like the last frame of that, him like banging on a car and screaming. That's
where,
like,
he's lost all self-control.
Right. That's like, this deal is over, right?
Right.
This deal is just over. And that means that he is vulnerable to take over, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so like the cleansing, it was a cleansing of this deal, of the notion that he could win. I don't know. I feel like it all hangs in the balance.
Can I talk about the women thing for a second?
Yes.
So in the second episode, there's this thing between Shiv and Logan where she's really impatient to come in and be the next CEO. And he tells her she has to do like years of training. And Shiv says something like, is this because of I'm a woman? I'm a minus. And he's like, yeah, you're a minus. I don't make the world. You know? And it turns out it's flipped.
Yeah.
Because in this episode, it's a plus that she's a woman. He's turned on his heels because of all this Me Too shit and all this New York Magazine story and this other woman pushing him away, and he's driving away from him literally. And it turns out, he does not make the world. The world is slipping away from him.
And also, you're only upset when people call you a dinosaur if you are a dinosaur.
Yes.
Like, if you called me a dinosaur, I'd be like, I'm not a dinosaur. That's so silly. I would not
But also, like, this was Shiv's opportunity to come in and show how competent and valuable she was. And she walks out on stage and she just fucks it up.
Does she?
No, she won that.
I don't think that was a fuck up.
You know, it's about being completely unimpeachable. And sometimes companies develop bad habits. And you need fresh eyes, clean hands, and new ideas to address those.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about a company that's structured like ours. We can do that while retaining core values, you know, manage change.
He's good, right? He's great. I think I'm a little more aggressive. Sometimes I think you just need a good old-fashioned dinosaur cull.
And who's the big T-Rex in your sights?
Oh, dinosaur attitudes, dinosaur values. No, I would never go after my dad. That's a sport others enjoy.
I feel also, like I'd write that up if I was a journalist and someone slipped me the news and leaked it to me, which I assume will happen. I would write it up as like new face of Waystar.
Yeah.
Royko, is Shiv going to be the next CEO? Is Logan's out? Blah, blah, blah.
I feel her ability to rattle off talking points was maybe even worse than Kendall's, to be honest. Obviously, Roman was the worst.
I think she said the right things, but I think she is starting to fray. Like, if you look at her from last year to now, she is starting to fray. And this is how I sensed it the last few episodes. And if you ever, ever, ever needed confirmation, it is how you feel when you have to take a call in a bathroom and you keep... And I've done this. I've taken very important calls in bathrooms where you keep walking by the hand dryer or or the flush sensor. Uh-huh. And so whoever you're on the phone with just keeps hearing flushing. And you don't know if you should explain it or not. Mm-hmm. But that is like a desperate, like, why is she in a Starbucks bathroom? Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she had to, she ditched the, what was she ditching, the board meeting to go over something boring.
Oh my god, that wonderful thing with her and Frank at the beginning.
Yeah,
he's like, I like to recite proof rock internally while we check we get compliant.
I love that.
Numbs the pain.
I love
that. Numbs the pain. One thing I do need to quickly jump in and mention, because we need to kind of pretend that this is Slate Money, and there's a little real world echo here which I just wanted to sort of pick up on, which was when Jerry is talking to Roman about Edward, the billionaire who...
Big
Roman,
fan of his money.
Oh my God, that great line from Greg. God. I'm such a big fan of your money.
I know.
Oh my God, Greg. But she turns to Roman and says, he's apparently conceptualizing a 300-year investing horizon. And Emily, you know who that is, right?
It's supposed to be MBS, right?
Well, no, it's... Yeah. It's a little bit MBS, but he's, you know, Azerbaijani. But the 300-year investing horizon, that's Masa Son.
Oh, SoftBank.
Yeah.
I thought he was Saudi money.
But he talks about things going on in Baku, so it has to be Azerbaijan, right?
Can we go back to good lines from the show?
Okay, favorite line.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Taffy, what's your favorite line from the show?
I also, from that scene, I really love, like, real... I love him. 100% independence, but from our point of view. I just love that.
That was an echo of the magazine that the National Enquirer Media Company did for Saudi Arabia. They created magazine for them.
But also, it's Russia Today.
Yes.
You know, he wants his version of RT, basically.
Yeah, or that Saudi Arabian glossy magazine.
He wants to turn ATN into RT.
My favorite lines were innocuous, but I think when Tom is talking about we're listening, and he goes, it tested great. And Roy goes, it tested fine. I just love that. And I also loved, who shouted horse potatoes?
Was that Nan?
Yeah, that was Nan. Horse potatoes.
Oh, horse potatoes.
Yeah. And when Shiv called Kendall and Roman the two cover stars of Toxic Male Monthly.
Accurate.
That's good. I like that.
I like the chemistry between Stewie and Kendall because they're broken up now and they're mad at each other. But they still have the glint in their eyes. Everyone, when they're kibitzing on this show, they just are really into each other. So Stu says to him, I hear your staff are all killing themselves now. And then Kendall's like, yeah, the thought you could be their boss. And it was like, boom, boom.
Boom, boom.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like they're all so much better than the like comedians' lines.
Oh, right. We didn't even talk about the comedian.
The comedian is so weird. The comedian is like just there to be like this soft, awful, like it's like supposed to be a roast.
Yeah.
But it's like
permission
just
to never fucking bore. Never. Oh, that's so funny.
Does that have a real life corollary, Felix?
So Sun Valley, they do bring in like comedians and Charlie Rose to like, you know, be the entertainment.
It's funny because it's true.
Felix is fully briefed.
I think my favorite line.
Respectfully.
I have never been to Sun Valley. I will never go to Sun Valley. The one thing that you learn about Sun Valley when you're a media reporter or in the circles of media reporters is that like either you're Charlie Rose and you actually get invited there as a participant, which is like one or two people, or they just place you in a pen, basically. And it's just the most miserable. All you can do is like take photographs from miles away and like not even be allowed to shout questions at people. And it's just miserable.
They wouldn't let you on the Airbus culture hike, Felix.
Right.
The culture hike, by the way, that is Aspen Ideas.
Oh, see, I know things.
Okay. Thank you.
Although there was that great line from Rhea to Logan where she's like, it's a culture hike, although I don't think you have any interest in either of those two things.
Oh,
that's very funny.
But Wamsgans, he loved the culture hike. Great job getting me on this.
Was he saying something about veal tits? He's like,
no, I know what he said. It was something about tits, but I don't think veal was the word. Maybe? He, what do I know?
Tom. Hey,
buddy.
Hey, problem. Hey. You're not picking up?
Dude, this is a great group. You did good. It's like I've fallen into a barrel of veal tits.
Yeah.
He's like so enthusiastic and so like happy to be there. That's
I
what I love
to hang
about
out
him.
With rich and important people.
Yeah,
and they get to pretend that I'm important.
Yeah.
You know what I loved? The other line I loved from Logan when they're reading the magazine story and they're talking about all the people who are trying to, you know, get in the way. He goes, they don't give a flying fuck for these poor bitches.
Yes. Shiv just looks like, what did he just say? It's
these
all about
poor
me.
Poor bitches. I love it.
My favorite line, I think the first ever time that my favorite line comes from Greg, when he's desperately trying to brainstorm a new like slogan with Tom, and he goes, it's good because it's not clear exactly what it means.
Which is what you imagine gets said all the time in corporate America, given the slogans that are coming out.
Exactly. Like, hey, you can't really corner us on this one because it doesn't mean anything.
So, okay. My question is, what happens now? Mm-hmm. And specifically, does Rhea join Waystar Royko as the heir apparent to Logan?
No.
Now that you say it.
Maybe.
Yes.
What?
No. Oh, because think about it. Just think about it.
Does the deal still happen? Does
no.
Shiv's...
No.
No, the deal is
she
off.
Is now the heir. She's just, he brings in someone outside the family.
Nah.
Because he hates his family
I think
so
the
much.
Deal still happens somehow. I think Shiv gets pushed into power or is named the successor as like a consolation prize. And Nan Pierce comes back to the table because it's so much money. No one else is going to pay that much money for a media company in 2019.
But as she said, my family will be fine. Like they don't actually need $25 billion.
Or does Nan couple up with Sandy Furness and become...
Because syphilis, it can just be cured, right?
Penicillin.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Do you think he got it at that party?
Yes.
I like a long game story that stretches over seasons.
I forgot about the party. Of course he got it at the party.
Of course he got it at the party.
Wait, which party?
Remember, like, the
sex party. It was the bachelor. It was supposed to be
Tom's bachelor party,
yes.
Where he meets.
Was Sandy there?
Yeah.
They were in, like,
they
a back
a secret
room.
Meeting.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
There you go.
I love that guy. He used to be on One Life to Live. And when I was at my first job at Soap Opera Weekly, I once got to ask him a few questions, roundup questions, you know, like, what's your cure for a broken heart? Stuff like that. He's nice.
So can you ask Jerry what her cure is for a broken heart?
Can I just say that she is like her, she can just like eat up the room when she's in there, like just blinking.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine being able to have that kind of power as like a person.
Although, like, the power of
it's also crazy that the in-house counsel is a woman there. Like, that's crazy to me.
Is it?
Where are the other women?
Sid Peach, baby.
Yeah, but that's news.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. Come on. It's news.
There was this great, I mean, talking about powerful women, there's the amazing moment when they're at the breakfast table and Nance clearly has no interest or desire or inclination to sign anything. And Rhea,
oh my God,
turns, she goes, Nan, is there not a way we could sign the LOI at least? And Nan just kind of looks at her and narrows her eyes and she's like, okay, you are not on my team anymore.
And that's when she starts looking into her, finding out that they had private meetings. But did we know about that meeting on the 13th?
Was that when she went to One Chase Plaza?
I don't know.
The secret when the day
when,
of the
you know,
suicide?
When she drives in on, into the underground thing and it's the suicide.
Safe, right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Because that seems super secret because of how she was.
But Nan would have known because she has to come back and say, guess what? There's an offer on the table.
Mm. Mm. So that's the big question, I guess. I don't think that's the big question, what happens to Rhea. I don't think that matters. All that matters is Logan Roy and who will be successor.
Do you really think that this is the last we've seen of Holly Hunter? I feel like you hire Holly Hunter, she's going to hang out.
She's not in your four-episode arc. Oh my God. No, this is what I think happens. I think that he brings her on. Everyone is so alienated from it, but it ends up he screws her the hardest.
Just like Lawrence, who was also there at Argenti's.
He's the vaulter.
Oh, Lawrence. I wish we had seen one interaction.
Yeah, because why have one little bar
one
in
little,
between them?
Yeah, or one little like...
Like the season one arc of Lawrence was super interesting. And then season two, he kind of came and went super quickly. And he just seemed...
I don't understand why Lawrence is still invited there.
seriously. He's over. Done.
He is over.
Mm-hmm. And so is his podcast.
We will be back next week, I promise, with even more amazing special guests. Episode 7, stay tuned. Thanks for listening to Sleep Money Succession.